The Stein Online Clubland Q&A begins right now.
Come along. It is 3 p.m. North American Eastern Time. That is 4 p.m. in the Canadian Maritimes, 4:30 in beautiful Newfoundland and Labrador and beyond the Americas, 8 p.m. in London, 9 p.m. in Paris, 10 p.m. in Kiev, where they're still waiting for Biden to send in the Marines, 11 p.m. in Moscow, where Putin is laughing his socks off, 11:30 in Tehran, where the Ayatollahs are laughing their robes off, 1:45 a.m. in Kathmandu. For all you Iranians who moved to Nepal to check out the quarter-hour time zone, 4 a.m. in Singapore, honkers, Perth, oh, I'm sorry about that, 7 a.m. in Sydney, and an even more civilised hour for the kippers and kedgeree in Auckland and beyond. You know how this works. Anybody around the planet is free to listen to the show if you want to ask a question, and many people don't. But if you do, you have to be a member of the Mark Stein Club, and we love to have you with us. We're a convivial bunch. I think you'll get along with most of the other fellows. There are sometimes some virulently unpleasant disputes, but they're rare, I would say, by the standards of these things. Today's Clubland Q&A is a slightly different format because I can barely bear to watch or listen to or read American news these days because it's self-evidently ridiculous. And so I clocked a couple of items and thought, let's just go for it and see where we are with whether there is still time for America to turn this thing around. And I cited three examples. An admiral, no idea how many stars they have. The whole star system is stupid. It's not a thing to have when you don't win any wars. But anyway, this admiral, however many stars he has, 37, I don't know. He was asked a question by Jean Shaheen, Democrat Senator of New Hampshire, about gender advisors in the military. And he gave as pathetic and grovelling an answer as he could give in all the jargon of a combination of military jargon and woke jargon. Terrible answer. Pathetic. Pathetic for a country that's just lost a war in the most humiliating fashion possible and can't actually bear to talk about it, honestly. And I'm not even talking about the left now. I'm talking about the pom-pom girls on the right. But you need to talk about it, honestly, because your admirals are a joke. Your generals are a joke. And when that's the case, and we all know the American way of war doesn't work, go on. Go on, try and defend, if you really want to, try and defend Ukraine's borders. You'll be going to war against the Red Army. How do you think that's going to go when you can't beat goat herds? So to me, this stuff is contemptible. The correct answer is to say, with respect, Madam Senator, we have just lost a war. It was catastrophic. Our predictions were all wrong. I believe our so-called intelligence community said that there was a danger that Kabul could fall within 90 days. In fact, it fell within 90 hours. And although people have said, well, yes, you know, we chiefs of staff guys are not the greatest brains on the planet, but we have a lot of technology, so we can do the bloodless drone killing thing. But no, it turns out we can't even do that because all we did on the way out the door was to drone some photogenic Muppets. Drone some photogenic Moppets. I wouldn't care if they drone some photogenic Muppets. I hate Elmo and Big Bird and all. That's part of the general infantilization of America. Well, I'm just throwing in an aside here. The Cookie Monster exemplifies everything that is wrong with American culture. Monsters exist in the Brothers Grimm and similar fairy tales in order to teach children that there is evil out there in the world. So the bloody awful third-rate crappy old Sesame Street replaces evil monsters with a monster who eats cookies, which might well explain why this country can't win any wars. Anyway, that's that was an aside. I didn't mean to get so heated this early on in the show, but the correct answer is to say, Madam Senator, with respect, the issue now is, and I love the transgender admirals. I think they look smoking hot. And you can't have enough transgender admirals, and I'm all for them strutting around. Let's have a 5-star transgender admiral. I've got no objection to that. But with respect, Madam Senator, these issues have to take a back seat to the fact that, in case you haven't noticed, Madam Senator, we've just lost a war. And so I think it's not the first war we've lost, but we're managing to lose them even more disastrously. So I'd like us to step back a bit and just rethink the American way of war. That was the first thing. Then the second thing I saw was the public health commissar, the guy who's the head of the National Institutes of Health or whatever it's called. And so actually, I think technically is Fauci's boss. And he's singing to the tune of Somewhere Over the Rainbow, a song called Somewhere Past the Pandemic. So our public health commissars are Judy Garland impersonated, just in case you thought that thoroughly modern Millie isn't camp enough. We now have Judy Garland impersonators running public health. And then the third thing was just a rather boring paper from Harvard explaining how in key areas, key high-tech areas such as artificial intelligence, we have a slightly outdated view of China in that we think it's the country that makes all the crap we can't be bothered making ourselves, like cheap T-shirts and cheap socks, cheap television sets. In fact, it's now ahead of the US in artificial intelligence. That's back in the real world. We don't have any kind of intelligence, artificial or human. So that's why we're obsessed with transgender bathrooms. Meanwhile, the Chinese are ahead of us in artificial intelligence. So I thought we'd dedicate this show to talking about the state of America and how serious the crisis is, because I don't hear it when I listen to the pom-pom girls of the American right talking about how all this really sets us up well for the midterms in 2022. Okay, and what happens then? So let's go to your questions. I've talked too long. I don't know, usually talk this long. Let's go to Eric Dale. Hey, Mark and fellow club members, maybe it's just the contrarian in me, but I think I'm going to go against the grain and say that, yes, America can and will turn it around. I think that the current progressive movement is destined to collapse under its own contradictions and untruths. To take a page out of nature, if a species is ill-suited to its environment, it will not last. Something that cannot go on will not go on. I think that a critical mass of people are waking up to the fact that our elites are not up to the challenges of the 21st century. I also think that more and more people are questioning the assumptions of the early aughts liberal world order and its rules in ways that don't, well, fit into left or right. I had a cashew nut about an hour ago, and it evidently a bit of it had lodged somewhere in my mouth. Anyway, Eric continues, I'm hopeful that as the natural human lifespan takes the Joe Bidens and Nancy Pelosi's and every other withered and leathery old gas bag out of the Congress, that a younger generation will free themselves from the old fights and fundraising pitches of the old regime and embrace real solutions moving forward. We may even wave a few constitutions at you. What are your thoughts? Well, I would love it if that were true. But I don't see that the current progressive movement is destined to collapse under its own contradictions and untruths. Which is a kind of generally Marxian view, aside from anything else, the internal contradictions of capitalism. The internal contradictions of wokeism are not half as contradictory, because they're all agreed, whatever the question is, whether you're talking about radical trans activists or Islamic jihadists, they're all agreed that more state with more power is the answer. As to the something that cannot go on, will not go on, I've been hearing this basically ever since I set foot in America. The idea that there are natural correctives, America is way past the natural corrective stage. If you talk about the dollar, we're on course to have added since Obama left office. Obama basically doubled the federal debt from $10 trillion to $20 trillion. We're now headed, closing in on $30 trillion in even less time. Now, if you talk to any politician of left or right in Washington and you look in their eyes and you talk to them about this, you can see that they have given no serious thought to paying off this debt, which is a thing. Other countries have debts. I made this point before. New Zealand paid off its, what they call, all its crown debt. The Liberal government in Canada paid down an awful lot of debt, in contrast to Justin Trudeau, their present leader. Under Monsieur Chrétien, the Canadian government paid off an awful lot of debt. Cato Byrne from National Review used to say, if only we could get American Republicans to be as fiscally responsible as Canadian Liberals. And it always used to get a laugh, and then all the fiscally irresponsible Republicans just went back to doing the old pathetic debt ceiling theatre. So clearly, that's something that shouldn't have gone on, but is going on. What will make it stop going on? As I've said many times before, the Chinese yanking the rug out from under the dollar. There's nothing hold that $30 trillion debt is being held up by nothing. So then you say, I think that a critical mass of people are waking up to the fact that our elites are not up to the challenges of the 21st century. It might be a critical mass of people among members of the Mark Stein Club. It might be a critical mass of people among the fellas you talk to at the gun shop. It might be a critical mass of people if you're with friends in a crowded diner. But it is obviously not a critical mass of people. Don't forget, this is what's so infuriating to me. That the majority of Americans are not even aware that they have been globally humiliated in Afghanistan. There are tens of millions of people who think that the right of someone with a penis to compete in girls' sports is the big... If you have to think about politics, such a bore. Most people don't want to think about it. Oh, can I just watch the telly and not have to think about politics? No, you've got to think about a bit about politics. What political issue would you like to think about? Well, I'd like to think about virtue signalling on the whole trans issue. Really, really, you would, wouldn't you? Would you like to? I mean, for example, J.K. Rowling has just got into trouble again because in Scotland, in the entire Kingdom of Scotland, they have now decided that if someone with a penis rapes a woman and then decides to identify as a woman, notwithstanding the fact that she's got the meat and two veg, that she has the right to go to a women's prison. So we're going to have now a world in which, in the Kingdom of Scotland, in which no one knows what the rape statistics will mean, because in a year or two they'll be showing that there's a huge increase in rapes of women by women. That's how insane it is. And yet the virtue signalling. You know, if you most people now get their news from Facebook, then there's another group of people who get their news from those somnolent, awful, ghastly half-hour network news bulletins, ABC, CBS, NBC, and from NPR. And all those people are not reaching a critical mass. And you know, the difference here, Eric, when you say the natural human lifespan of the Joe Bidens and Nancy Pelosi's will take the withered and leathery old gas bags out of the Congress, they don't actually believe in this rubbish. You know, Joe Biden is the guy who said Robert C. Byrd was his mentor. Yeah, and how he boasted, he was so out of it during the debates, he boasted about his ability to work with segregationists. And Kamala Harris had to say, well, wait a minute, is that actually a skill set we're looking for in the Democrat Party? So he doesn't care about anything. They've taught him, they've trained him. Or maybe he's forgotten that it's not a good thing to boast about your ability to work with segregationists. But his views on anything haven't really... His view boils down to 10% for the big guy, as it says on the Hunter Biden laptop that most Americans remain unacquainted with. So he's talking... His concern is 10% for the big guy. And Nancy Pelosi's concern is 10% for the big girl. She's someone who basically uses her position to get a lot of insider trading type info from people who petition the all-powerful federal government. So she knows whose stocks are going to go up when. And she's just decided, by the way, she said she was going to step down as Speaker or Majority Leader or whatever it is. But in fact, she said, oh, no, after this next election, I think I'm going to be staying on. These are people who believe nothing, but are just going with the flow. The flow is AOC and that generation. So when these guys get taken out or drop dead, they're going to be replaced by people instead of just, they're going to be replaced by people who mean it. And so I don't think, Eric, I'm all for contrarian views and we don't have enough of them. But I would say all this is, again, talking about the suicide of the United States without considering the actions that China might take. And while we're sort of busy with all this stuff, China is actually acting. And again, that's something that is, we don't take into account, that its ability to act, while we've been talking rubbish for a generation now, has in fact dramatically improved. Speaking of which, so I'm all for contrarian views, but I don't think this is actually gonna hack it. And the question, by the way, and also just to put it in another way, okay, you talk about the politicians, which I don't even bother talking about because a lot of this stuff is way beyond the politics now. But America has a frozen political system. You can't do. The reason, for example, Brexit has happened, albeit unsatisfactorily, is because a month before the European elections in 2019, Nigel Farage decided to form a brand new political party a month before those elections, and he imposed on Theresa May and her Conservative Party the worst electoral defeat they'd had in centuries. And that killed Theresa May's premiership, as a result of which Boris, who is a loathsome, unprincipled fellow, but nevertheless was elevated in her place for one thing only, to get Brexit done, which he kind of more or less did. You can't do anything. That was between, I think, May and January. You can't do anything that fast in America. You have the same two crap political parties since the Civil War, one of which, as I said to Snerdly yesterday, are basically a party of woke mammy singers. They're as repellent and racist as they always were, but they've now got the woke stuff on top of it. So they put on the blackface and then put on a little woke mask on top of the blackface. And These two frozen parties, and then you have the other party. So let's say everything goes swell and you sweep everything in 2022 or even in 2024. Oh, wow, we've won the House, we've won the Senate, we've won the Oval Office, just like November 2016, when Paul Ryan then scuttled it. Shall I say something else while I'm talking? Because this is why this awful third-rate, wretched parade admiral, who shouldn't actually be on the Chiefs of Staff. He's not what you need when you've just lost a war in full view of the world. And what disturbed me about that was the way nobody, as they would in a real legislature, as opposed to this Potemkin legislature, but a real legislature, even if just to have a good time, the other side, the Republicans, the so-called Conservatives, would all hoot and jeer at him. And then they would say, I can't believe you're not doing anything to address the fact that you get more money than anybody and you can't do anything with it. Anyway, Douglas says, Hi, Mark. With respect to the American Navy's capabilities in East Asia, say the Taiwan Strait and the South China Sea, are we past the point of no return? The Chinese Navy is much larger than the US and America's is spread throughout the globe. Yeah. Thank you, Douglas. It's not China has the largest surface fleet in the world, but it's not about, you know, carrier groups and things. Now, China has figured out, that's why in some ways, you know, being dominant in AI, for example, is more important when it comes to getting your way in the modern world than how many carrier groups you have. They used to say that the Indian Ocean was a British lake and the Pacific was an American lake. Now both of them are Chinese lakes. So the idea that somehow we're going to defend Taiwan with the US Navy, I don't think is going to go anywhere. My friend and former boss, Conrad Black, says that it wouldn't take many airstrikes, that if China did attempt a naval invasion of Taiwan, it wouldn't take many airstrikes to force them to badly damage them to the point where they would have to withdraw. Yeah, I can't see the United States bombing its loan shark. You know, the thing about that is that So let's say we have one of those airstrikes that Conrad's all in favour of, and we kill Chinese seamen. And then someone has to place a call to Chairman Xi and says, Chairman, we still don't seem to be getting those chips in the new motor vehicles, and the lads down at the car dealerships are getting a bit antsy about it all because they've got all this stuff sitting around and it doesn't go anywhere because it needs these Chinese... Chairman Xi is going to give you the chips when you've just bombed his sailors? I can't see that. Robert Morell says, Hi, Mark. I hear a lot of the Conservative commentariat making gleeful predictions of a Republican sweep in 2024. I don't believe it, and even if I did, I wish they would shut up. By raising expectations so high, anything other than a landslide would be perceived as something of a Democrat victory. But as I said, I think they live in a fool's paradise. They look at the sorry state of Democrat governance and assume that this will translate into enthusiasm for a Republican alternative. But they completely ignore how despised the Republican Party is by Republican voters. Until some prominent leaders of the R party are toppled like Confederate statues, many of us R voters are going to vote with our butts and sit this one out. All the more so if the congressional Republicans keep rattling their sabers and pronouncing how sacred the Ukraine border is while doing bugger all about the US border. The independents have little enthusiasm for the Republican never-ending war machine. It's the main thing that keeps them away from the Republican Party, in my opinion. Plus, the Democrats have already demonstrated they can steal certain races, So why wouldn't they do it again? I predict a muddle in 2024 with nearly a 50-50 split in both the Senate and House again. How say you? That's very well put there, Robert. And I wouldn't disagree with most of that. I wouldn't disagree with most of that at all. I think the thing here, and again, just to go back to this admiral, because the pom-pom right is still, when the military comes up, it's generally in the shape of, you know, documentaries on what great warriors our men are as individuals. And these are often interesting stories. They're talking about how they're going through some valley in Helmand province and they're coming under fire. The village headman has managed to get his chaps up to the top of the hill and they're coming under fire, and how they managed to get out of there and minimise the casualties. And these are quite interesting stories sometimes. I've heard a lot of them. I've met a lot of people who are involved in things like that. But in the end, they don't matter if you lose the war. And you keep losing the wars and you can't accomplish any strategic objectives. And so the pom-pom girls of the right are not where reality is when they're still doing all the, oh, thank you for your service. Yes. But it's doing no service to an utterly dysfunctional Pentagon, an utterly dysfunctional general staff to keep doing the pom-pom girl, thank you for your service thing. At some point, you've got to grow up. You've got to man up. You're not doing whatever it is, JROTC at high school. You're actually a grown-up trying to figure out why the American way of war is crap and dysfunctional and hasn't worked for your entire lifetime. And that involves being grown up and putting aside the pom-poms. And instead, and furthermore, this kind of thing fails to acknowledge what thoroughly modern Milley and this new guy who's going to be vice chairman exemplify, which is that the wokesters, the left, have captured the military. Just as they've done their long march through the institutions, and there aren't a lot of institutions left. First they did, remember, it's just 20 years ago that the Boy Scouts said they weren't going to have homosexual scoutmasters. And then they lost a ton of money and they got kicked out of all the church halls, at the Congregational Church and the other post-Christian churches, etc., etc. And so eventually they became, now they're, you know, on board with the full thing. In other words, they got woke because, you know, the thing that I think Glenn Reynolds, the Insta pundit, likes to say is get woke, go broke. I think that was one of his coinages, which is certainly true for a lot of private companies. But it's actually not true for a lot of these non-commercial enterprises. So they were targeted. The bastions of male virtue were targeted. The Boy Scouts, you know, Lord Baden-Powell, who was a curious figure in many ways, but he founded the Boy Scouts to assist boys in becoming men. And now it's just a woke joke. And so the left looks on it and thinks, great, that's another one under our belt, the Boy Scouts. Now, who can we wreck next? I tell you what, let's go for the big one, the military. And the idea, and you look at the cowardice of Republicans on these issues. When do they say, oh, this is great. Oh, look how Biden's doing and nobody likes Kamala. All we have to do is sit here and we will win by default. Just make sure you send money now to sendmoneynow.com and that way we'll have a big enough treasure chest so we can buy more ads and improve our name recognition so when they decide they don't want to vote for these Democrats, they'll recognize the name of the other guy. This is a banal and stupid and stunted way to look at the things where listen again, and by the way, it doesn't even take into account that at the midterms, COVID is still going to be a thing. We know that now. It will be the hanging Chad variant, which will come sweeping into selected swing states just in time to scupper the midterms. Peter Geraghty writes, "Hi, Mark. I think the woke nonsense taking over the United States, including its military, is indicative of the stress the United States is under and the inability of Americans to face reality, including the reality of a lost war. When I watched the short video of the Admiral, my first thought was that these people need to go and lie down until they feel better. It means the United States withdrawing from global geopolitics, but I cannot see how the United States can hold together internally under this woke madness and project power as in the past. Should the United States focus on internal problems rather than trying to pretend it is still a great power? Maybe it needs to focus on saving itself rather than the world." I would agree with that, Peter. I don't want the United States. You know, and I say this as someone in the early years of the War on Terror, I spent a lot of time around the men who devised the strategy of the War on Terror. There were certain defense secretaries. You've heard me talk about lunching with Rummy, with Donald Rumsfeld, and with other key figures, and going to Gitmo and meeting some of the inmates and all the rest of it. I spent a lot of time with that, and at a certain point, I just realized, and it was, and I again, overseas as well during the Iraqi occupation. And what did it for me, I think, was doing the ISIS thing when the border post that I'd gone through a few years earlier, on the Jordan-Iraq border that I'd driven through. When it was being manned by soldiers from the 3rd Infantry Division, and they were sort of quite in, they don't get many Canadian tourists in that part of the world a month after the fall of Saddam. So they were interested to meet me, and I pulled over and we had a bit of a chit-chat about this and that and all the rest of it. And I was very, I spent a lot of time around the people who were both in the front lines of the War on Terror, as in the Iraqi invasion, and with the people making the decisions back in the Pentagon. And I can say now, however many years on, that I don't think the United States should go to war. And I doubt very much it will go to the war. What's the point of even talking about, oh, we need to send a strong signal to Putin? Putin's strong signal to you is you're a joke and you're losers. And if you think he's going to change his view on that when the party that's lost to goat herds with fertilizer decides it wants to take on the Red Army, you know, this is a horrible thing. These are not serious commanders. These are not serious commanders. They're third-rate people. Their third-rateness is evident. They're third-rate ass-covering bureaucrats. And it's absolutely appalling. That 20 years into, you know, normally you fire the parade generals a year or so into, you give them a chance to see if they can up their game. Now it's not just a point of giving yourself medals from your shoulder to your scrotum, like Thoroughly Modern Millie's done with all his participation trophies. But it's about actually waging a real war. So you say, okay, give the real war's on now. So you got to go to horrible places and kill the enemy, and inflict defeat on the enemy. So go to it and let me know how it goes. And 6 months, 9 months, a year, it's going horribly. So you fire the parade generals, and get some real generals. And unfortunately, in the United States, it's parade generals all the way down. And I think for that reason, there are betrayals as well. We all know this. If you don't hear them on, you know, Fox News doesn't cover it and CNN doesn't cover it. They're both agreed that they don't want to hear anything unpleasant about America. But you hear about all the betrayals. If you just spend 20 minutes on the BBC, where they're talking to some, you know, poor woman who was running some Afghan girls' school and believed all the rubbish that she was being told. And then now the Taliban are in charge and she hasn't been paid since August, and she's in hiding and in fear of her life. And these are tragic tales. It's not, it's, you know, it's a careless thing to keep betraying your friends. It's a very careless thing. So just for that reason alone, I don't think it's worth going to war over Ukraine. I think there should be a smaller, meaner, leaner military. And I think there should be a military that is focused on defending its own borders before it goes to war over Ukraine's. Sabre Mike Carroll, who I think is from the Buffalo area, certainly somewhere in Western New York. Sabre Mike says, Mark, I went to the Army-Navy game last Saturday and it honestly was among the saddest events I've ever attended. It felt like a celebration of a nation that had been defeated and destroyed, but everyone was just pretending it wasn't. The event was in New York, New Jersey, to mark 20 years since 9/11, and seeing the people who lost that war, like that human blobfish Millie, being paraded around made me sick. Also interesting to note that the alleged commander-in-chief was not in attendance. Yeah, why would he be? Because he knows the politics of this. An Army-Navy game. You know, OK, so why isn't it that the first thing that happened, you know, again, I don't get how stupid the people who run the military are. The Pentagon needs to be absolutely emptied out, razed to the ground, salt the earth. And as I said, put the Joint Chiefs of Staff in a strip mall in Des Moines and have a smaller, leaner, meaner military. This is not... Why would Millie be paraded around? You know, the first thing that should have happened after the fall of Kabul, not the first thing, the first thing is you have to say, okay, we're through, we've been humiliated. I tell you what, just two things now. It's all going south at Hamid Karzai International Airport, but let's try and not get any more of our men killed before we finally skedaddle. Oh, and while we're at it, let's not try and drone anybody of grade school age. And that's all they had to do. That's all they had to do, and they were incapable of that. And I can't stand listening. I can't stand listening to these boobs among the pom-pom right who think that, you know, it's all about... They can't find a way in which they can talk about this. But the other thing, the third thing that should have been done after... OK, that's right, we're not going to drone any photogenic moppets. We're not going to get any of our guys killed. And the third thing we probably ought to move the Army-Navy game because we were going to hold it in the tri-state area as a big, you know, marker for the 20th anniversary of the War on Terror, start of the War on Terror. But we've lost the War on Terror. So maybe we should just move it to some neutral venue that doesn't have those kind of associations. So, you know, maybe we could play it in Kansas or Maine or Idaho or wherever, but not, you know, really anywhere near the Twin Towers. Do you think we could do that? Oh, no. It's the Pentagon. They got 3 months to change the venue, but they can't do that. Pathetic. Alyssa Angel says, the National Institutes of Health, Francis Collins, should be locked up for his sake and ours. If he were on the street singing this song, I would have called the police to pick him up for vagrancy and disturbing the peace. This is a good example of how lightly the NIH has taken its part in destroying what's left of the fragile US economy. Collins is tone deaf on this score, and if he wrote that dreadful song while at the office, he needs to reimburse the Treasury for time wasted. Our bloated government will have us all singing for our supper soon enough. I may have to start raising chickens to make sure I'll at least be able to get eggs once everything totally goes to hell. Actually, on that last point, Alyssa, as many people know, I have cats because I made a cat album. And one of my cats is very particular about his food. He's picky. And the great thing about America was that if you went into your Price Choppers and what have you, there would be a whole row of different types of cat food. And now, my poor picky cat, he's like me. He's like some snotty, hoity-toity foreign type cat who likes particular delicacies. And the entire row, the entire supermarket aisle of cat food is empty. I don't know what that means. I don't know whether that means all the cat food is manufactured around the Wuhan, back of the Wuhan Institute of Virology, like everything else. But the cat food supply chain has broken down. I'll see if I can post a picture of the scene in my local supermarket. Read the cat. Not that local, actually. That's the thing. His food's running out. So you have to drive miles to the nearest supermarket to get him some food. And when you get there, there's nothing there. Michael Covino says, "Hi, Mark. Happy holidays to you and yours. So with the USA's leaders flushing the nation down the toilet, is there any other nation out there that you might see step up to protect individual liberties and freedoms? By the way, I'm half expecting the pathetic Liz Cheney to call you before the January 6th sham commission to claim you encouraged the riot, since you call the Capitol a citadel of crap on Fox News that day. To us club members, that line remains an apt description of the legislative branch." Yes, she's welcome to. She's welcome to do that. It is a citadel of crap. When it comes to, you know, when it comes to other nations, the problem here is that America, and it's not just the end of America in the way the transfer of power, for 1950 transfer of power from informal, but, you know, we all know it happened. From Britain, of global dominance, from Britain to America, marked the end of Britain as the globally dominant power. Or going back to the Battle of Trafalgar, that settled between Britain and France, who would be the dominant power of the 19th century. What's going on here is that America, it's the end of Western civilization, because we're all going to be at the bottom of the cliff. The United States is obviously the heavyweight there, and the United States has more exposure in terms of the collapse of the dollar, after which it's Weimar with smartphones around these parts. But everyone else will be over the cliff too, because the woke nonsense has basically America has succeeded in imposing its particularly insane form of identity politics, initially on the Her Majesty's dominions, so Canada, Britain, Australia, what have you. And I was rather disappointed. There was a report I caught on the news, not on the American news, but how I've talked before about how opposed to le wokisme. This is the word they call it in France, le wokisme. And Monsieur Macron has been bitterly, and prominent French educators think this wokisme is completely idiotic. And I was slightly and they've resisted it. But I was slightly disappointed to see a report that, notwithstanding their best efforts, le wokisme is making modest advances in Western Europe. So that brings us to Eastern Europe. And that brings us to countries like Hungary that are, look at what is happening in America and in Western Europe and want no part of it. So the question there is that as the East is now the repository of the old Western virtues, whether that will be enough to keep them viable until this insanity passes in the United States. And that in itself is an interesting question. But here's the big point. And again, this is why I never like it when people are talking about A, Nazis, or B, commies, because that's what people who don't know anything talk about, because they're the only two historical references that anybody gets. Oh, the Nazis are the most famous bad guys, and then there are also the commies. Because the commies, and indeed the Nazis, were evil, but they were not as deranged as we are. So the communists, for example, so you can say what you like, but if you sat down in a room with Karl Marx or Lenin, you could have a conversation with them in which you might completely disagree with their economic theory. But at least they thought that a guy with a penis was a bloke. And if you were to say to them, well, you know, if the bloke with the penis says he wants to go to a, he's arrested for rape and says he'd like to go to a woman's prison, we say, why, sure, yeah. And if you're, and you can be as impeccably progressive, you can be a big lefty, you can have voted socialist all your life, like J.K. Rowling, but if you think that someone who rapes a woman with a penis is a man, you're a hater. And in defence of all these poor trans rapists, we have to speak up and say what a hater you are. Nothing in communism is as bonkers as that. As I said, it's evil, but it's not bonkers. It's evil, but it's not insane. So even, again, this is the laziness, the complete laziness of our political discourse, as I think... Was it Eric way back at the beginning, or was it... I think it was Eric. He said a lot of this stuff doesn't fit neatly into conventional notions of left or right. And he's quite right about that. And that's why saying, oh, commie, you're Hitler, no, you're Hitler, isn't going to get us anywhere. Because Hitler was evil too. Hitler was evil, but generally speaking, he didn't think that... he didn't have any plans in the Hitler Youth to let the nice Aryan lads with penises run against the fetching young fräuleins in their dirndls to see who was best round the track. We have reached a level of insanity that is beyond left and right. And I think ultimately the fact that it is now every aspect of life that we have ceased. Pardon that, if you heard that. Cat, my dog and my cat have just decided to start some kind of fight. That being the case, we will take more of your questions, but in the meantime, we'll pause to reflect on the lessons of history.
Keep up to date with the past on the 100 Years Ago Show with Mark Stein.
A submarine sunk? A week is a long time in Australian politics, and where British schoolteachers go, no man goes. It's December 1921.
100 years from today.
Your world news update. The messy aftermath of the Great War is gradually being cleaned up. Instruments of ratification have been exchanged for the peace treaty between America and Hungary, meaning the state of war between the US and the Austro-Hungarian Empire is finally at an end. More good news. Austria and the nascent state of Czechoslovakia have agreed to submit ongoing disputes about the border between them to international arbitration. Step to the syncopated rhythm, let's be going with them. At the Washington Disarmament Conference, U.S. Secretary of State Charles Evans Hughes has extended his 5-5-3 ratio in naval power between Britain, America, and Japan to a rather more cumbersome 5-5-3-1.75-1.75 ratio. Under the scheme, the French and Italian navies will be permitted to have 35% of
of the total warship tonnage of the Royal Navy or the US Navy. Lord Lee, Great Britain's First Lord of the Admiralty, has proposed the abolition of all submarine warships. Currently, America and Britain have over 80,000 tons of submarines, while Japan, France, and Italy have less than 35,000. A new prime minister has been named in the Republic of China, for whatever that's worth. Of more relevance to world affairs, maybe the reorganization of his own government by the Chinese warlord Zhang Zuolin, Supreme Governor of Manchuria, who has appointed Yan Huqing, currently a delegate to the Washington Disarmament Conference, as his foreign minister.
Why there's a change in the weather, there's a change in the sea. From now on there'll be a change in me. My walk will be different, my talk and my name. Nothing about me is going to be the same. I'm gonna change my long tall one for a little short fat. I'm gonna change my number where I'm living.
Some changes made, and then there'll be some more changes made. Sir George Fuller took office as Premier of the Australian state of New South Wales and appointed his ministry, including such eminent men as Sir Arthur Cox and the former Premier Sir Joseph Carruthers. That was in the morning. In the afternoon, Sir George and his fellow ministers were all obliged to resign following the loss of a confidence vote in the House. With a term of just 7 hours, George Fuller is the shortest-serving premier in the history of New South Wales and indeed of the British Empire. In the United States, the Senate has passed the Russian Famine Relief Act and approved the appropriation of $20 million. Subject to the condition that all purchases of food be made in the US and shipped to the Soviet Union in American vessels. Are you a civilian employee of the US government working in the Panama Canal Zone? If so, you have hitherto enjoyed the benefit of having your rent and utilities paid by American taxpayers. Now, President Harding has directed that government employees will be responsible for their own rent and other expenses. Have you for some time felt that the world needs a new moth? Well, it now has one. The new species of Lepidoptera was discovered by the entomologist Charles Clark at Opoo in New Zealand and has been named Batrachedra astricta. It is distinguished from the similar Batrachedra tristicata by the absence of the round black apical spot on the forewings, as well as a lack of elongated stigmata. In sports news, Poland's new football team has played its first international match in Budapest. It lost to Hungary 1-0. Just 8 years ago, the Indian polymath Rabindranath Tagore became the first non-European to win the Nobel Prize in Literature. He has long had reservations about the British education system and has championed open-air learning on the grounds that being taught within four walls constrains the mind. Mr. Tagore has now put his preferred system into place in the new Visva Bharati College in Santiniketan in Bengal, where students will learn in the open air under the mango trees.
My car will meet her, and her mother comes to. We buy our true soul, and our mother comes too. come soon.
Ah, but when you go and sulk at the club, then have a bath and a rub, do you ever look at the label on the towel? In 1887, James Cannon founded the Cannon Mills Company, and not long thereafter, what is now known as the North Carolina municipality of Cannopolis, where its manufacturers are based. Mr. Cannon is responsible for the first towel ever made in the American South. From that modest start, his company is now the world's largest producer of towels. He is dead at 69. RAF Captain Edmund Tempest was a formidable flying ace during the late World War, with at least 17 acknowledged victories that downed multiple German Fokkers. His bravery earned him the Military Cross and the Distinguished Flying Cross. Latterly, he had been serving in the British Mandate of Mesopotamia following an accidental plane crash at the Royal Air Force Base west of Baghdad. Captain Tempest is dead at the age of 27. Hans von Besseler was the German commander who took the Belgian city of Antwerp and was then made Governor General of occupied Poland. On the day the armistice was signed, November 11th, 1918, he fled in disguise back to Germany, a broken man. The Germans despised him for being too lenient with the Poles, and the Poles despised him for being too Prussian. General von Besseler is dead at 71. Dmitry Parsky was a distinguished commander of the Imperial Russian Army on the Eastern Front, and the first Tsarist general to go over to the Red Army. I am far from this Bolshevism you preach, he said, but I am ready to work honourably with anyone, even the devil and his disciples, if only to save Russia from German slavery. General Parsky is dead of typhus at 56. In 1885, the German microbiologist Julius Petri invented what is now known as the Petri dish, in which a warm liquid containing the jelly-like substance agar is allowed to cool and solidify before whichever microbe-laden sample is then placed in the dish. The Petri dish quickly became a familiar sight in laboratories around the world. The dish lives on, but Herr Petri is dead at the age of 69. Like the kissing I've been missing from the mammy since I'm gone. I ain't had a bit of rest since I left my mammy's nest. I can always rest the best in her loving arms. So sweet to sleep in my old tuxedo. Let me lay there, stay there, never no more to tuck him to sleep in his old Tucky home. Henry Watterson was a Confederate soldier turned Pulitzer Prize-winning writer, editor, and publisher who made the Louisville Courier-Journal a must-read until he fell out with its new owner a couple of years ago. Sample quotes of his bold, forceful writing style. One, on being rebuked for criticizing the Democrats. Things have come to a hell of a pass when a man can't whip his own jackass. Two, on American destiny. We are a great imperial republic destined to exercise a controlling influence upon the actions of mankind and to affect the future of the world as the world was never affected, even by the Roman Empire. Mr. Watterson is dead at 81. And that's the way of the world. December 1921.
100 years from today, 100 years from today.
This is Mark Stein's Clubland Q&A live around the planet. If you enjoy me in audio form, don't forget tomorrow, Thursday,
It's the replay of Stein's Seasonal Song of the Week on 7aid Radio in the UK. That's at 9 o'clock London time, which is 4 o'clock in New York or 1 o'clock in Los Angeles. Hart Leonard, right. That last remark, by the way, from Mr. Waterson on American Destiny is sobering to reconsider a century later. Hart Leonard writes, "Is this country past the point of no return as a single entity of 50 states with continuing common interests and values? Yes, it is. I chortle to myself each time I hear you excoriate the Constitution-waving pom-pom girls. Our Constitution should indeed be cherished, but any successful political system necessitates a fundamental allegiance to truth. The moral relativists who infest our media, our government, our corporations, our schools, and even our religious institutions no longer place value or emphasis on finding or adhering to truth. There is no greater evidence of this than the despicable, morally bankrupt, damnably evil media actively and gladly participating in a daily, nay hourly, attempt to overthrow a duly elected president, Trump, through deceit, lies, exaggerations, and omissions. A media to a large extent, which is seemingly to a great extent, controlled by US intelligence services. They will continue as they have suffered no consequences for their treachery. How can we survive as such? I doubt we can. The media, I got this wrong. I was at an event at Hillsdale with Molly Hemingway, and I was asked about the media. And it was, whatever it was, halfway through the Trump presidency, I guess. And I was saying that to me, it wasn't as big a problem as the deep state, which was just nakedly putting its fingers on the scale and attempting to, it had created phony baloney investigations involving the most powerful intelligence agencies, not just in the United States, but on Earth, in order to take out one of the two presidential candidates, America's crappy, sclerotic political system lets Americans choose from. So in other words, to make the election a fait accompli. I think, by the way, that's one thing they'd like to reverse. I mean, nobody likes Biden and nobody likes Kamala. So the problem is, if you persuade Biden to step aside on health grounds or whatever, who do you get? Well, you don't want Kamala as president. So all this talk, oh, we're going to put her on the Supreme Court, because that's the only thing you can give a vice president. You can't tell her to, she's going to be ambassador to Luxembourg. She's not going to take that. To step aside as vice president, she's got to be on the Supreme Court, if not Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. At that point, Biden would get to pick a new vice president, if he wants. He doesn't have to. But the thinking is that he'd pick Hillary so that you would have, just in case November the 3rd, 2020 didn't do it for you, you would have the ultimate nullification of those four hideous years, in that the person who should have become president in 2016 would belatedly become president. That's the way these people think. That's the way these people think. And if that's done, you know, constitutions aren't something you can't. A constitution isn't a nation. A constitution, all constitutions, I always say, presume the behaviour of gentlemen. So if you don't have gentlemen, it doesn't matter really what the constitution says. I know this time a week ago, everyone was getting all excited about how the Supreme Court is going to rule on abortion. But it's playing defence. It's playing defence to find a legal obstruction that will save you from what's going on. There was a thing, nobody thinks about Canada, and I'm certainly not advising Americans to pay any attention to Canadian precedents, but there was a thing about 20 years ago when certain ministers of the Crown, liberal ministers, were basically insufficiently subtle in being on the take from powerful interests. And the... The proposed solution to this was to tighten up the ethics code. Now, ethics codes are complete bollocks. If you need an ethics code, you're done. I think I testified to this under oath in the Carrie Katz thing when I was asked whether I'd ever done a course in American constitutional ethics. And I have a low view of people who depend on ethics codes. It isn't going to cut it for you because you're going to find some legalistic workaround. But the one they were proposing was to put a little card on the desk saying, it is illegal for a minister of the crown to accept a bribe. And they were going to stick this in every ministry in Ottawa on the desk of the minister. And this was going to do the trick. No, that tells you it's over. You know, constitutions are designed for moral people. Nobody, you cannot, and this is where, as I said, we're engaged. You know, people think, to go back to Eric's first point, I think we're reaching a critical mass of the, there are people who know what's going on and are disgusted, and there are people who know what's going on and are cool with it because they think America is evil. So you have to dismantle it by whatever means necessary. And then there are all the oblivious people. And if they only paid attention for 10 minutes a week, but they don't because they, as they say, they don't have to. Now, maybe they will have to. People take an interest. Maybe it won't take the collapse of the dollar. Maybe just if this inflation kicks in. You know, Paul Krugman, the whatever he is, the Nobel-winning economic laureate, says that where do we get off on all this thing that people with very little money notice inflation? I think they know. I mean, as I said, when I mention the cat food at the supermarket, I'm not talking politics there. I'm talking about feeding my cat. And so if it is not possible to feed my cat, I think, oh, that's, I wonder why that is. Maybe I shouldn't be listening to so much Adele and watching so much on Netflix, maybe I should pay a bit of attention. Do you know why there's no cat? What do you mean? Something to do with China? I can't follow all that. So at a certain point, as in Weimar Germany, people notice this thing. And then the question is, which way they jump. Walt Trimmer says, the clip featuring Mark's very own Senator Shaheen, Democrat of New Hampshire. Yes, Jean Shaheen was a Democrat governor some year, I guess, what is it, late 90s now? And then she decided to run for the Senate and is now a Democrat senator from New Hampshire. She had me rolling in the aisles when the intrepid admiral rolled out every woke military jargon cliche in the Department of Defense politically correct manual in response to her inquiry about gender advisors. My favorite part was when the admiral said that their highest priority is a safe and secure work environment for the soldiers, sailors, airmen, marines, coast guardsmen. He left out the Space Force. I wonder how he will manage that when things go kinetic. Yeah, this safe and secure work environment. Yeah, ask the guys outside the fence at Hamid Karzai International Airport. Oh, you can't ask them. They're all dead. I was disgusted by this man. I mean, you know he's crap. Come on, America. You account for 40% of the planet's military. And again, this is where I'm furious at the pom-pom girls of the American right. Well, thank you for your service. Thank you. It's not about thank you for your service. Not when you've lost a war and your solution to that is to put this joke, cringe-making joke of an admiral in as vice chief or whatever you call it, vice chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. He gave a ludicrous answer. And as I said, the thing to do, all he had to do was just to say, with respect, Madam Senator, I believe the United States military has had a very bad year, a disaster of a year, in big ways and small. Small ways being those, you know, what was it, the line of the Vermont senator? How do you ask a man to be the last man to die from mistake or whatever it is? They didn't ask them. They were just helping people outside the gates of the airport, and they got blown up because the most lavishly funded military on the planet can't exfiltrate in a competent manner. And that's before you start going looking at the dead kids they kill and all the rest of it. Just which people remember. You know, again, it didn't make the American papers for about 2 weeks. It was very odd to me because the BBC had it on the following morning. Yalda Hakim was interviewing the uncle of the dead kids, and I was thinking, "Wow, this is really this is a bad story." They claim to have killed jihadists, but in fact they've just offed a bunch of kids. God, it's going to be terrible when this breaks in the American media. Well, it didn't break for 2 weeks until. It was an ancient event. And the reason the New York Times and co. didn't cover it, essentially, is because it would damage Biden. And again, this gets back to the absolute evil of the American media. We have here's a good way to look at it. Peter Duncan says, "Hello, Mark. I find that as the older I get," he's from Washington State, "I find that as the older I get, all of the world's problems seem to be connected. This makes for less and less new issues to really talk about, since we're talking about different parts of the same issue. What do you think? Thanks for everything, Peter Duncan." And Peter's absolutely right about this. It's the particular set of circumstances in which we find ourselves. We have a wretched education system in the United States, as we've just seen. I mean, people are supposed to... The present generation, which after 2 years of COVID, are never going to recover. And it doesn't really make a difference. In Michigan, for example, in Detroit, they're now giving teachers, because the teachers are finding it stressful teaching in these circumstances. So they're giving them Fridays off. And that would be fine if they were teaching mathematics and history and English Monday to Thursday, and then on the Friday was the day they teach all the woke bollocks about the pronouns and all the rest of it. And so if they were just giving the teachers the Friday off and saying, okay, we can't teach all the woke rubbish now, we're just going to have to focus on mathematics and history and whatnot, that would be fine. But that's not actually what they're doing, is it? Is it? So we have, again, a leading global power. You know, this business that they're now... Is it your state, Peter, that believes this, or is it California? I forget which. That mathematics is racism, and they're not going to require certain standards in arithmetic and reading, writing, and arithmetic because that's racist. So we have this contrast. In America, America teaches its children that mathematics is racist. China teaches its children mathematics. Who do you think is going to win the future? It's not actually that difficult when you're corrupting your human capital, when you're debauching your human capital. We've debauched not just the dollar, but we have actually debauched human capital too, which is far worse. And so these problems are connected. They're connected in part because, you know, who knows what would have happened to China? There's not a lot of evidence for communism's ability to survive. Hang on a minute, some chump has left the telephone on. Sorry about that. I love that. As I was saying, there's nothing that works. in America, and that includes me. I don't know why we go on air in a studio with a live telephone in it. It doesn't make any sense at all. But my thought here is that they're connected. Everything is connected because America chose to connect them. It was a conscious decision. It was again, this is virtue signaling unto death. Now, if you take the idea that somehow, if you make your enemy more capitalist, if you make him richer, he will see the benefits of your system. That is the sort of, this is again constitutionalism, when you think in constitutional terms. If you liberate the communist economy, they will start to get interested in issues of liberty and they will become like us. And instead, as Douglas Murray said, we became more like them. We became more like them, which should be perfectly obvious because most people, unless they're Americans, don't think of it in terms of, you know, abstract principles of liberty. You know, it's nice if you're a free country, but even if you're not a free, I mean, if you take take these Eastern European countries, which have been free and unfree, unfree and free at many stages of history. So Hungarians don't think of themselves in terms of abstract principles. They think of Hungary as a place where Hungarians live. So they don't have to clear away constitutional pom-pom girls to understand that if you, because they don't have all this all nation of immigrants thing. Yes, we have the magic soil that that convert people come from states where they mandate female genital mutilation on your little girl at the age of 3. But the minute they set foot in New Jersey, the magic soil of New Jersey suddenly has them talking about great constitution. These other countries don't think like that. Hungary is where the Hungarians live, so they have an advantage. China is where the Chinese live. And okay, if the Chamber of Commerce is deluded enough to transfer the entire American manufacturing base to China, well, okay, thank you very much. But we're still China, and China is about the Chinese. So, no, we've got no interest in your principles of liberty. And, in fact, we now own so many people around the Western world that we can even make crap Hollywood movies bow down to us. So you don't even, you Americans in Hollywood, you have your corporate storytelling, but it's not even for the American market anymore. It's for China. It's for the Politburo. These things are all connected. These things are all connected. And as long as the pom-pom girls are talking about unimportant stuff. But I will tell you one lesson. I will end with one lesson we should learn from the left, and which is really why I keep going. It's nice to convert people. And I've enjoyed it whenever it's happened. You know how Nigel Farage and I, the impact we had on the audience in Toronto and a hall full of Toronto liberals. And sometimes if you just lay things out for them, you can actually pierce through the sort of NPR, CBC mush and get some clear thinking, even with liberals. And to a certain extent, we're doing that as well at GB News. In the UK, at least to judge from numbers and from some of the reaction I've seen. But, in the end, it's not about numbers. It's never been about numbers. It wasn't about numbers in the American Revolution. If you know anything about all the people who fled from New York State to what's now Ontario, it's never about numbers. It's always something bigger than that. And that's why if you get too obsessed with the horse race of politics, where it is about numbers, you know, if it's in certain precincts in Pennsylvania or in Michigan, it's about numbers. But as those precincts are corrupt, you know, again, talking about numbers is a reductive thing. It's bigger than that. It's bigger than that. And it doesn't have to be. It's all the best stories are about a guy going up against the odds. It doesn't matter whether that is Gary Cooper in High Noon, Do Not Forsake Me, Oh My Darling, walking down a dusty main street all on his own, or whether it's 007 taking out 47,000 minions in identical Bako foil cat suits running around the hollowed out volcano. There's a reason that is an element of our storytelling, that the greatest adventures are about a guy bucking the odds. And it's possible for America to buck the odds. It won't be through this awful, ghastly send money now to sendmoneynow.com party. But it will be about influential people who become inspirational. You know, J.K. Rowling is wealthy. She has what Americans call, I believe, FU money. She's the wealthiest woman on the planet. I don't know whether that's true or not, but she's up there. And she doesn't need to do this. I think the stupid headline written by the 12-year-old intern for Tuppence Ha'penny in The Independent was J.K. Rowling needs to stop tweeting, but she isn't. You know, that's not wit. That's one of those lame-o formulas in which these people write. They can't even argue. They can't even argue. That's one of the pitiful things. That's why they want to shut down the debate, because they can't argue. But that is also great opportunity. As I said, you don't need to worry about whether there's, you know, 10 million people with you. You need it won't. That's not how this will be beaten. It's about more and more people living in truth, and the majority of people living in bollocks. And at some point, when people are trying to assert a lie and make you swallow the lie, all you have to do is state the truth. J.K. Rowling's rather clever tweet, where she invoked all those, you know, war is peace lines from George Orwell's 1984, as you'll know if you've heard our adaptation, and then she added a person who rapes you with his penis is a woman, you know, and she's happy to do that. She doesn't have to do it. She's getting disinvited from parties, and the thing about that is that when you're told you can't say something, just insist you do so again and again. Call out these people. Why is it that you take this admiral seriously? He's an idiot. He's a cowardly idiot too. How do you expect him to beat the Iranians, the Russians, whoever you're stupid enough to go to war with next, when he can't even stand up to Jean Shaheen? Courage, as Dan Rather used to say. I thank you for those questions. I've run way over, and I do apologise to that. It's not something I should be doing. We always like to end with a little music, and you know what time of year it is. Christmas beckons. We've had some seasonal songs at Song of the Week, both in our essay format and in our Serenade Radio format and in our video format, and we will have more in the days ahead. Do you know the German operetta of Lysistrata by Paul Linker and Heinz Bolton Backers? It was a big hit in Berlin in 1902. Where were you in 1902, as they say on the oldie stations, assuming they have any still? Anyway, it was a big German hit, and Johnny Mercer loved its big song, Das Glühwürmchen. And in the 50s, he wrote some lyrics to it, and it was a big hit in America. In the 60s, he wrote some Christmas lyrics to it, and that wasn't a big hit at all. But I like it even if nobody else does. And I've done it a few times over the years in one form or another. This is from half a decade back. Half a decade back, with the great Claire McInerney on Piccolo in the title role as one now sadly retired blogger raved, Christmas glowworm is like crack.
Shine, little glowworm, glimmer. Shine, little glowworm, glimmer.
Lead us less too far, we wonder. Yuletide cheer is calling yonder.
Shine, little glowworm, glimmer.
Hey there, don't get dimmer. Light a path through wintry snow and keep your tail aglow. Glow, little glowworm, glow and glimmer. Swim through the sea, a snow little swimmer. Live up to your proud nomenclature. Show all the folks just why we rate you. This night could use a little brightening. Light up your burger, Christmas lightning. Don't want to miss that mistletoe.
Glow, little glowworm, glow.
Help us to make the darkness brighter. Look out below, there's small fry beacon. Hoping to see you flash that beacon. Rev up your amps and show your full worth. Brighter than Christmas lights at Woolworth. Make like a big department store.
Glow, little glowworm, glow.
Glow, little glowworm, light our tree up. Wow, every kid who shouldn't be up. But don't get too incendiary.
No need to take off like a missile.
Linger a while and wet your whistle.
Sparkle around my Christmas bow.
Whoa, little glowworm, whoa! From a long ago December, brighten the sky from cold to isthmus. Spell out your greeting,
Merry Christmas.
When you gotta glow, you gotta glow.
Glow, Christmas glowworm.
Light up the snow worm. Glow, Christmas glow.
When you gotta glow, you gotta glow. That song was written as a gavotte 120 years ago in Berlin. Yours truly with Kevin Amos and the band and our chum Claire McInerney doing a splendid job on piccolo in the role of the glowworm and on spirited backing vocals, Mary Carew, Jan Mooney and Emma Kershaw. You may have seen Emma doing A Winter's Tale with me and Tim Rice a week or so back at Stein Online. I'm delighted to say Emma will be joining us on Christmas Eve for something special, and I think you'll enjoy it. Thursday, tomorrow, means a replay of our seasonal song of the week on 7-8 Radio, 9 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time. That's 4 p.m. North American Eastern. Laura's Links will round up the internet for you. Friday brings the Mark Stein Show on telly on GB News. Some more Christmas tales for our time. Rick's Flicks with the one and only Rick McGuinness. Hope you'll dial up one or more of those. Stay safe, stay free.
Mark Stein's Clubland Q&A is a production of Mark Stein Enterprises and Oak Hill Media. All rights reserved.